Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure.
Now, what does the road safety legislation aim to achieve?
Well, in theory, the idea is that these drug driving laws, which all six states and both territories also have, starting with Victoria in 2004, is that the police in all, across all jurisdictions, are able to randomly ask drivers to pull over and then by the roadside test their oral fluids, their saliva, and they test them for three substances, THC representing cannabis, methamphetamine and MDMA. And this is sold as a road safety measure. It's got nothing to do with road safety. We've had these laws for about a decade. They've never been evaluated to see whether they have improved road safety. They should be evaluated to that end. We test wrong drugs. We test drugs with a small risk associated with them. We don't test drugs that have a much higher risk. It's hard to understand that. The governments are very coy about what the cutoff levels are in the roadside drug testing. The fines are pretty steep. In New South Wales, over $1,000 and 6 months license disqualification. How this is going to work when medicinal cannabis comes in, which surely is going to happen in the next 12 or 18 months, how these laws are going to operate when people can maybe then taking medicinal cannabis, possibly under medical supervision and direction, and then get steep fines and 6 month license disqualification. It's really all crazy. We really need these laws reviewed.
And what else would, and why haven't these laws been reviewed up until, yeah, why is it taking so long to review them and to update them and to change them?
Look, my assumption, maybe wrong, is that the people who advocated these laws knew that they were really about the war on drugs and knew that they wouldn't evaluate well and made sure that no one evaluated them. It's becoming clearer and clearer the opposition to these laws is starting to increase. Apart from the decision by a magistrate in Lismore on two occasions, there are other people on the bench who are getting unhappy about them. A lot of senior lawyers are unhappy about these, not just in New South Wales, but in other jurisdictions as well. It's only a matter of time before there's a test case fought through the courts. When this issue was raised in the ACT, the last jurisdiction to adopt drug driving laws in Australia, the Commissioner for Human Rights, Helen Watches, advised the ACT government that the ACT drug driving laws would not survive a court challenge, and yet the ACT government went ahead with these laws. So I think these laws are overdue for review and, in my view, for reform.
And I guess, what is your opinion on the prosecution of drivers for cannabis in their system days after they have smoked it?
Look, let me start off by emphasising that I'm very much in favour of laws which improve road safety. There's no equivocation about that, and all the people I work with on this drug driving stuff have a very similar view. We want to see safer roads. The issue is whether or not people are being fairly punished for laws which punish the guilty and don't punish the innocent. That's the issue. I've followed this literature closely, and I accept that there is an increased risk of a road crash among drivers, potentially among drivers who have recently consumed cannabis. It's not a big risk, but there is an increased risk, and it took a long while to really demonstrate that, but it was demonstrated, I think, quite convincingly when drivers who had been killed in crashes that were clearly due to driver error rather than technical malfunction of their cars were compared with other drivers killed in road crashes. And that evidence showed that drivers who had cannabis on board, THC on board, were at a slightly increased risk. There's a lot of other evidence for and against, which is very confusing. Mm. I accept that there is risk. But the evidence is much clearer for other drugs, and all of this was gone into in great detail in the UK in the so-called Wolf Report, an expert committee went into this with great thoroughness. Unfortunately, the UK government didn't adopt their recommendations either. So that's a mess. But I think eventually we'll get there. The public are made to understand that this is all very similar to alcohol. It couldn't be more different. In the case of alcohol, it's based on good science. We are certain that alcohol is very much associated with an increased risk of a road crash, death, or serious injury. The evidence for that is overwhelming. It's the alcohol random breath testing has been challenged many times in the courts, never successfully. And it saved many lives and saved billions of dollars. But drug driving is based on poor science. It punishes the innocent and lets the guilty get away with driving while impaired.
And I guess keeping to that train of thought, there have been calls to amend the testing procedure to one that tests for levels of impairment. Do you think that this makes more sense?
It would make more sense if we could be very certain about the science. That's really what this depends on. And the science that correlates risk of impairment with blood levels or saliva levels or oral fluid levels is very, very complicated and messy. And really that needs to be gone into by independent experts, not decided by politicians, with all due respect. And I think that's a step we have to go through. And until we go through that step, I'll have an open mind about that. But in the meantime, punishing people who, some of them who are driving while impaired, some of whom are not, punishing those people quite severely is, in my view, really terribly wrong. And it's bad enough if somebody lives in a big city and loses their license for 6 months. But I really feel for the people who are living in rural or remote parts of New South Wales or other states and territories who get slapped with a 6 month license disqualification. That's really cruel.
Mm. Well, Dr. Wodak, thank you so much for joining us today on 2SER.